following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
All right, welcome to a special midweek edition of the Filthy FRB Show. This is Filthy Tom Lawler, joined as always by Front Row Brian. And this is a very special edition. Oh my God, already?
What happened?
I don't know. All I heard was Matt say, oh shit.
I didn't know this is Front Row Brian.
Yeah, what's up, man?
I know you from the OG, from the UG.
Oh yeah. They say that I was run off that place, and that's not true. I banned myself because I wasn't happy with some of the moderators there.
Oh, I'm a moderator there, but it wasn't me. I'm lazy.
Yeah, there was some jabroni like Ziploc and a couple other guys.
I remember Zippy.
Yeah, I mean, is he gone?
I just remember him from like the early days of Naga.
Yeah, I mean, anything I would say, I'd get frozen. Hey,
Naga, is that when somebody keeps bugging you? What is that?
It's Naga? When somebody interrupts two guys talking.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Kind of like how
you want to go back to what you're saying, Tommy?
I was trying to give you a good introduction, and then you just cut me off with the, oh, shit.
I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah. He's a professional broadcaster. Do
you want to rewind it?
No, we don't edit. That's our gimmick. There's no editing on this thing.
Yeah. Anyways, I was going to introduce Matt as an esteemed Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt known throughout not only the Northeast U.S., but some parts of Canada as well. And he's probably best known for his role in the Kimbo versus Sean Gannon fight, as he could be seen as an extra in the background many times. Matt Santos, everybody.
So, Matt, tell us about, because this epic fight probably been seen by, tens of millions of people have seen this Kimbo versus Sean Gannon fight.
And you think that many, Brian?
What's that?
Tens of millions? That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, this went viral. I mean, this is the definition of viral. I think we lost him.
Oh, he's in the ether? Maybe he's sworn to secrecy. It's possible.
Let me see if I can call him back here. Maybe we should have just called him on his phone.
He's like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
I'm back.
Okay.
Matt, were you sworn to secrecy or something? Is that why you hung up on us?
No, but I don't think I'm best known for that. I don't think anybody knows who I am for that.
We're trying to put you over.
Yeah, there you go.
So it happened in your gym, and tell everybody where this gym is, and give us all the background info. All
right, so this was my first gym, and it's in a town called Cranston, Rhode Island. It's just south of Providence on 95, and I was in like the third floor center area of a big ass factory building, like no windows, no outside light, anything like that. Just me and like a horrible, horrible place.
Sounds great.
You know, it would literally get to 110 degrees in there in the summer. No shade on the building. It was so sketchy, not like dangerous sketchy, but just the building itself was not really that cool. So that was my first gym. It was a nice place. It was a nice place to start, you know? So how it happened, how it came about, I knew Sean Gannon from mass MMA scene, you know, he trained with me when I was teaching up at City of Tong for a while. He would come into class every once in a while, do some sparring. Obviously, you know, back then the scene was real small. This was like 2005 or something like that, like 10 years ago. So the scene was real small. Everybody knew everybody.
I think it was before that, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it was like 2003.
Oh, shit. I'm old. I can't remember. I remember I had dial-up when that happened. I remember it took like 45 minutes to an hour to download the very first Kimbo fight.
Yeah. It used to take like 30 minutes to download, you know, one topless photo, and you'd be done beating off by the time the full picture was downloaded. You get like one nipple shot, and then you're done.
Tom, not to interrupt this too much, I just got a tweet from somebody that said, oh, you're trying to make the show more family-friendly, but you have porn stars on, and you're talking about bro jobs. So I'm already getting some resistance from people on my goal to fit within the confines of family entertainment.
Oh.
But let's continue.
So, yeah, so, you know, I remember when all the shit talk was going on with Icy Mike on the UG, and I remember Gannon's name was brought about.
He owns Reality Kings, right? Is that right?
I'm not aware of any companies that he may or may not own. I don't look at that sort of stuff.
Okay, so he owns Reality Kings.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I remember all the banter and all the back and forth, and they were like, the challenge was, I remember him saying, it was Kimbo would whoop anybody who had never boxed professionally. So, lo and behold, all this is going on. I wasn't on the MMA TV all the time back then, like, you know, really slow computers and stuff. I remember Sean talking to me about it, saying, you know, we had just gotten a commission in Mass. And he's like, I think if I do this fight in Mass, it could mess with my ability to fight. Do you think we could have a fight at your gym? I was all about it just because, like, you know, back then MMA was still thought of a little bit as, you know, an outlier, not like people who really could fight. It was just people who could do this type of fighting. Oh, isn't that pro wrestling? All that other business. You know, like, people would talk shit on MMA all the time back then. You know, a real fighter, somebody who could fight with their hands, would smash an MMA guy and all that. So it's like, you know, it was a little bit of pride in the sport that I was involved in. And, you know, pride in my friend Sean. Sean's like, I can beat this guy. And Sean, you know, what a lot of people don't know is Sean was like I think he was a Golden Gloves boxer, maybe was on the Junior Olympic team for boxing. Or, like, I don't know if he fought in the Junior Olympics, but I think he was on the Junior Olympic team for boxing. He was also a Bay State Games judo champ. So he's like a well-rounded martial artist. He wasn't just like a slugger. And I'm like, well, can you beat him? And he said, yeah. I go, all right, no problem. We'll have that at my gym. And that was, you know, that was the gist of it. That was just my involvement. You know, as the event was coming up, like, I became a little bit more active, you know, in talking with Sean and a couple other people who were involved. So I ended up having to, like, meet, like, well, before that, and I want to erase what somebody erroneously said on Joe Rogan's podcast. I built the wall that surrounded the gym, not Chris Palmquist, that little punk. You don't take man credit for something that another man did.
He tried to put himself over, huh?
Yeah, he said he did. He said he had to come down early and help build it. The fuck out of here. I built that. Me, Keith Jeffrey, Pete Jeffrey, two friends of mine. Pete was awesome. It was actually my roommate at the time. We built that wall. And it was it was a very sturdy wall that lasted until the day I left that gym. I had to tear that thing down. It was a very strong man wall. So I built that wall up, you know, because someone was going to get really badly hurt outside of fighting, like just by colliding with those big old factory poles or like running into my weights or something like that. All I could picture was like those fight scenes from Any Which Way But Loose, you know, like just they're traveling like 40 yards to fight. So I built that wall figuring it would keep it a little bit safer.
Brian, do you know what he's talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the video. I know the wall. I've seen it quite a few times.
That wall was stout. I don't think anybody could have knocked that wall down. And like, you know, they had 500 pounds of two men.
What about like Juggernaut? You're telling me Juggernaut couldn't knock that wall down?
Well, if
Brock Lesnar,
Brock Lesnar would have got a solid hurt shoulder if he ran into that wall. Wow. I guarantee. I overbuild everything I build.
All right. So how do you build a wall? I mean, what is that like?
Well, you got to frame it out. I think it was 8 foot across. If not, yeah, it was 8 foot or 10 feet. So I made two frames. What did we use? 2x4s. Yeah. 2x4s on the top and bottoms, and then we made posts going between the top and bottom, and we also shored up those posts by putting 2x4s in between the posts. It was solid. And then we put...
You never watch like Home and Garden Network?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have an idea how he did it, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's how I did it. And then I put... I want to say 3/4 inch plywood or maybe 7/8 if that exists. It was really heavy plywood. That thing and nailed the shit out of everything. Then we put mats over it and drilled the mats into it. And then we put another layer of mats over that. It was intense. So yeah. So I ended up having to pick these cats up from the Marriott Hotel in downtown Providence.
You're talking Team Kimbo?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had to pick them up, and I drove a Plymouth Neon back then, a little small four-cylinder car, and I loved it. It was always full of garbage, much like Tommy's car. But it was great. It was great on gas. I had to pick them up.
My car now is not that bad, Matt.
Really?
You got a Jeep, motorcycle? Right?
It's a Jeep, so I can just like toss stuff out as I drive.
Yeah, the wind must blow the filth away also.
A little bit. Not too much. Not too much.
So this filthy thing is not a gimmick. It's a shoot.
Somebody broke his car in Providence and didn't steal anything.
That's true.
Legitimately, you can smell his car from about 15 yards away when he opens the trunk. With the wind going the opposite direction, you can still smell it. It's legit. It's definitely not a joke.
So they send you over to pick up Team Kimbo, and are you like a little, you know, not that you can't handle yourself. Of course you can handle yourself. You're a black belt.
But he thought he was going to end up with Captain Stabbing. Out of Miami.
Yeah.
I knew what you're talking about, Tom.
Or the cum fiesta or something.
So I picked them up, and Kimbo's walking through the Marriott, which is a fairly ritzy hotel in downtown Providence, playing, I want to say it was either his phone or maybe an iPod type of thing.
Playing Candy Crush.
Through speakers. And I don't know if he rode with me. I want to say he did, because I distinctly remember the feeling you get when you're like at someone's house and they have a real big dog and you're not sure if that dog's cool or not yet. But I definitely spent some time with just he and I. He was on the elevator where it was like, I'm like, what's this? Like, is this dude just going to try and swing on me or something? And I was definitely not a black belt then, and I'm still not so sure that I would like to tangle with Kimbo. He's a little bit bigger than me, and all it takes is one punch to drill me into next year.
And he was jacked as fuck back then. Yeah. I mean, he was on a lot of shit.
Well, I have no idea about that. I don't really know about working out a lot, but like that dude was, he was very muscular. Had like a 20-inch waist.
Matt.
Yeah.
You don't know about working out, but aren't you like a phys ed guy?
Yeah, but I'm not really big into exercise or drugs or steroid use. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know anything about that stuff. Exercise I know about, but not like what Tom does. I go to him for advice.
So throwing you under the bus there. The Nevada Commission is going to show up at your doorstep tomorrow.
No. Exercise advice.
Oh, exercise advice.
No. I don't think
Tom's show up all they want.
Yeah. They're just going to have to smell where you live, the filth that you live in.
Well, he's had to clean up his act now. He lives with a woman.
I know.
Can you imagine?
I remember when he lived with another woman and I had a cat sit for them. It wasn't that much better. It wasn't that much better.
So you're in an elevator or...
It was either elevator or my little ass car.
Right.
And I'm just sitting there like, this dude, it's weird, you know? Like, you don't know him other than he's going to a bare knuckle sparring match. And he flew from Florida up. And, you know, all the videos I saw online of was just him being like a savage. But, you know, needless to say, he didn't do anything. I think he was intimidated by me also. It was just a weird, like, you know, Mexican.
Sure he was.
What's that?
Sure he was.
Well, it makes sense. It makes sense. And then he saw my neon and he knew for sure that he didn't want anything to do with me. Yeah. So we get to the gym. And we go in there and it's whatever, you know, like they're doing their things, you know, and like, I didn't tell anybody this is going on. Even Pete and Keith, I think I just told them I needed to build a wall. So
I didn't know until like 2 years ago, Matt.
What's that?
I didn't know until like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Nobody knows. No, like my dad's seen that video when he was in Afghanistan, his roommate was big into fighting and he had no idea that was me. Yeah, a lot of people have seen that video and like been in my gym. They're like, "Have I ever been here before?" I'm like, "Nope, don't know anything about it." Best kept secret ever. It's a fairly well kept secret, I think. So we get there and like, you know, I don't know any of these people. I think I like they had a whole big crew of people. Turns out most of those dudes are just porn stars. They would have gotten beat down badly if there was anything
that happened. And the MILF hunter.
Yeah, I didn't get any autographs for you, Tom. Sorry. But like, yeah, they weren't really a group of guys that were gonna that should have been going to a bare knuckle fight in case something, you know, popped off. But like a bunch of my students were. Hey,
hold on, let's think about this, Matt. If shit started going sour during this fight, and those dudes just got butt naked and tried to fight you, wouldn't you back off?
I would have snapped them with towels. I would have treated them like it was phys ed class, snapped them with towels, made them wear jock straps. You know, yeah. So. Like, they're like, well, we should frisk people. I'm like, I'm not frisking anybody. Yes. They wanted me to pat people down. I'm like, I'm not patting these dudes down. They just came from Florida. I'm not patting them down.
I thought he said fist.
I thought you said fist.
And I was
yeah.
I do have delicate lady-like hands, but no, I wasn't going to do that either. So they're like, they wanted me to pat people down. I'm like, I'm not patting people down. That's awkward. I just asked everybody individually. I've got a good lie detector. I can tell when people bullshit me. I'm like, hey, do you have a gun on you? And they all said no. So I believe them. And no guns got pulled out in the interim process. But what wasn't known is I had a few of my students who were less than the finest upstanding citizens they could be. So there were a couple of weapons in there that were in case something happened, they were gonna pull it. But I told them to keep their guns.
What are we talking here? Like hacksaw Jim Duggan 2x4, a tire iron.
One of my students who's passed away now, he had a shotgun in his gym bag.
No shit.
And a couple other guys had handguns, and everybody had knives. You know, my school was a little bit shadier at the start. Not like doing anything shady, but like I had a few students that had been to jail a couple of times. You know, so it was different back then. Now I've got like doctors and stuff like that, which is a lot nicer, and they always pay on time. Then people like from the Mass and Rhode Island MMA community started rolling in. Next thing you know, there's like, I don't know, 50, maybe 75 people in my gym, which doesn't have the capacity for that. And mind you, this is just a regular, I think it was a Monday night, because it was, you know, Tommy, you know Chin, right?
Yeah.
It was like Chin's first class. He thought that was like a common fixture in my gym, was just blood type fights. And he's like, well, what's going to be next week? Like chicken fights? I'm like, nah, that was just a one-off. This kid still trains with me 12 years later. So people start rolling in. And Sean's in back, and now the backside of my gym, like there was a bunch of things up there, was a gymnastics school, and he was warming up on the spring mats in the gymnastics school, shadow boxing, you know, psyching himself up for this. This is a, you know, it's different than a cage fight, you know, like when you're just gonna be throwing hands with somebody bare knuckles, and like Kimbo's got like basketball sneakers on and sweatpants, and that's it. Sean's like all got his, I think he taped his wrists, maybe. I don't know if he taped his hands.
Did Kimbo have on Reeboks or
no? Kimbo had the Reebok fight kit, actually. They issued a really early one.
They spell his name right, or
bread on his back. Just bread. I don't know if he was wearing Reeboks or Jordans now that you mentioned. They were high tops though. So.
British Knights, maybe?
No.
I'm watching it right now. He's got dark basketball sneakers on that you can't really tell the brand, and he's got like ash colored,
yep. Great sweatpants.
Yeah,
on.
Sweatpants,
but not tapered at the ankle, which I prefer, and Tommy likes also. Those are just baggies.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be harder to fight in. I think you would want the ones that are tighter around the ankle. Yeah,
I would also, and it didn't help him either way. So,
Matt, were you involved in the negotiation to get Kimbo to show up?
I had nothing to do with that. No, it just came to me as a fait accompli. It was a done deal. Like they're like, hey, we need a place to have this fight. I'm like, all right, I'm in.
And so Matt was like the Dallas, he's like the Cowboys stadium.
Yeah. When you got a big event, you give him a call.
Yeah. When you have a big, unlicensed sparring match, people come to me from around the world. So the choice is from Ireland to fight at my gym.
He's like the next PT Barnum.
Yeah.
So set the record straight. What were the rules?
All right. As I remember, because like I said, I didn't have anything to do with that.
Okay.
I think my boy Mike had something to do with it. Mike Littlefield. But from what I remember, the rules were no ground fighting, but not no takedowns. No kicking, but not no knees, and they never mentioned elbows or standing submissions. So, if that was going to be me, thank God it wasn't, it would have been a lot of judo throws and trying to like get Kimbo to land right on his head, or me running until he got tired. But that's how I remember the rules, and that's, I think, how it was explained to me that night, because I was, I'm a sportsman, so I'm very, if somebody trusts me to be a referee, I'm going to do the most impartial job I can do. So they gave me the rules, but, we obviously noticed that quickly dissolved into fucking chaos. So there was no need for me other than to try and keep the fight from getting out of control.
Which it did very, very quickly into the fight.
I don't think it got out of control. The fight ended the way it was supposed to end. out of control is like everybody throwing hands and no fight happening, That's my vision of out of control.
I wouldn't want to mess with that guy that looked like Mark Henry that was there.
The big fat dude?
That was Kimbo's brother or something?
Which one? The air jacket or the big fat?
The big fat black dude. It's okay. You could say black because you're black.
Yeah, I know. you ever see when Keith Hackney fought Akebono? I think that's who he fought.
We fought Emmanuel Yarborough.
Yeah, it would have been the same results. That would have fallen, and he wouldn't have been able to get up. And that would have been that. So I wasn't really concerned about him. I wasn't really concerned about any of those guys. I just wanted to turn to
a ball. Lay some shots into his balls. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It never got out of control because, it ended the way it was supposed to end. It stayed a clean fight. There was some interference, giving people some time to breathe, but whatever, after a certain point, it was pretty obvious it was going to go in Sean's favor, barring a miracle punch or something like that. So I wanted it to keep going and play out like it's supposed to.
So did they try to suppress the footage?
Not that I know of. Like I said, that my part was really just the hosting of it. It wasn't, I didn't have anything to do with before or after or anything like that. I just, I would go in and visit Sean when he was at the hospital. I'm bringing some Gatorade and stuff like that, power bars. I think I brought McDonald's one night.
Donuts?
What's that?
No donuts?
Nah, I tried to feed into stereotypes that much.
Because he's a police officer?
No, because he's a big dude. Yeah, because he's a cop.
Is he still a cop?
As far as I know, he's a really good police officer. He's really knowledgeable about the law, and from what I've heard when he tells me about police stuff, he's not a jerk to people. He tries to be fair. So he's a really good police officer from everything I've ever heard.
I mean, if you are a shitty police officer and you are trying to screw people over, do they tell you that? Do you have shitty police officer friends that tell you that?
No, but I've heard stories of cops that will admit to things. Yeah, but none of my students have ever admitted to anything shady.
Okay,
I've met other people who know him.
I thought you had a guilty conscience.
What's that?
I thought you were carrying a heavy load on your shoulders.
No, that's going to be on your lower back later on.
come on.
What? Didn't you say you were doing mid-back squats?
That's not even a real thing. What the hell are you talking about? Mid-back squats.
Getting CrossFit. low back squats. Something. Something squats.
All right.
All right. So.
You're more like special ed. Instead of phys ed, buddy.
That's actually my degree. It's not like in teaching special ed. I actually have a degree in special ed. Like I passed lower standards. So the fight kicks off, and you know, like Sean comes out, it's none of this, like no announcing, no nothing, no, I don't even think they touched hands. It was just a fight. Not even a shove. Like, it was so weird.
Thing back then, though.
What's that? You
know, the fist bump didn't start happening until later on.
Actually, the first fist bump happened in Vietnam. It was platoon leader, and he would fist bump his soldiers when they were coming in from patrol. So, yeah, the fist bump happened way before that.
No, in the cage.
Oh, I don't know about that, dude. I don't know. I don't know when the first fist bump happened in the cage, but...
So, after the fight, Sean wins the fight. Kimbo can't answer the count. Like, how... What was the extent of his injuries?
Sean's?
Yeah.
He had a hematoma on his forehead, and he was probably just real exhausted. Like, they fought for almost 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Nonstop. Like, at the end, you know, everybody's, like, trying to get everybody to, you know, stand up. And I'm like, I think I said to one of his guys, I go, if that's your friend, don't let him get up. He's not going to win. Like, there's nothing that he can do. If he stands back up, he's just going to get hit some more. You know, because, you know, it was obvious. It was, you know, repeated body shots and then head when he couldn't fight. That was, you know, that's. There was nothing to be gained from him standing up at, like, the third time or the second time even. So, so after, you know, everything gets broken apart and, like, you know, they're pouring water on Sean's head and ice. Kimbo is, like, just gassed and breathing like a dog. He was hurting too. But from what I hear, he went to the strip club that night.
Which one?
Hospital. Yeah.
Which one?
Foxy. Foxy Lady.
Of course.
The premier strip club in Rhode Island.
Of course. MILF Hunter probably went in there and just cleaned house.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. But you got to figure, I don't know, porn stars to strippers, it's a different trade and level, I guess. I don't know. I'm really up on my porn star stuff.
Yeah. Is it a different trade in Rhode Island, really?
Now it is. It used to not be. But, yeah, so they went to the strip club. Sean went to the hospital. I met him there, I think, that night. And then, the rest is, as they say, is history.
So because it was an unsanctioned, basically an illegal contest, you didn't want to tell everybody, hey, that's my gym. You weren't trying to, like, make that your 15 minutes of fame.
Well, they said it was a secret, so... When people started calling me from Vegas and Florida to ask me who won the fight, I would try and pretend like I was stupid. But, you know how secrets are. They only work if you say don't tell anybody else. So, like, literally within 15 minutes, I had people calling me from the cast of The Ultimate Fighter, because I think that was in filming. People called me from Florida. People called me from Vegas to see what happened with the fight. I'm good at keeping secrets. Now it's like such an out. It's an open air story. Now it's way too late for me to get my 15 minutes of fame. But yeah, I didn't say a word of it. Probably until like 2011 was the first time I lit out to anybody who wasn't in the know already. Wow. I played dumb with everybody.
It's a heavy burden. It's a heavy burden to carry, Matt.
I just keep secrets good. I've always been good at keeping secrets, especially other people's.
So where were you, Tom, when this epic encounter went down?
I was in middle school, actually.
No, I was in college.
Xbox.
I was in college. I was living in Florida. I remember exactly where I lived. That's why I knew that it was 2003, because I lived in this apartment place called The Fountains. And I remember I would get home every day from college, like in the afternoon, and rush to the computer to try to see if the video was out yet. But I had no clue. I had no clue that it was Matt was there, and I had met Matt actually before that, so I didn't know who he was. So.
I met Tommy when he was a young 16-year-old trying martial arts because he had a bullying problem at school.
bullying him, or he was bullying them?
No, he was getting bullied. And it was because he had a stutter and a lisp, and he had a little swishy way in the way he walked. But
Swishy way? What does that even mean?
Yeah, I don't know. You tell me.
Way.
You're the one who's getting bullied, Tom. I wasn't. I have no idea why they were picking on you, but there was a lot. There was a lot to pick on. No, actually, I met Tom. He was probably like 19 years old, and he had come up for summer vacation or something like that from Florida. I think, or maybe it was before you went to college, but it was right around there. You were in the teens. Because you're the same age as Dan Semler, right?
I was preteen.
You're a tween?
Yeah.
That's gross. Yeah, so I met him. We had both trained at this place called JBA in Fall River. And that's where Joe Lozon's coach, Joe Pomfret, started. He and I were training partners. That was my first training partner coming up, you know, back in 98. And, yeah, and I met Tom when I think I'd already had my school, or I'd just come up and he was there, and I trained with him once back then. And, he said that, I think the exact quote was, "You're the one who showed me the guiding light of what my future could be in martial arts." That's what you said, right, Tom?
Actually, I said, "You are the guiding light," not even that you showed me.
Oh, my bad.
Matt, you are the guiding light that will mold my future in the martial arts. And I owe everything that I've become as a man to you.
That was the quote he gave me in his handwritten autobiography. It's I've got the only copy.
Yeah.
When is that coming out, Tom?
Tattoos my lower back.
It's mine. It's mine.
There's only one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, you know? It's inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think they're going to do one of those 30 for 30s on the Kimbo, Sean, Gann. You imagine? I think it'd be great.
Somebody should do that. Why doesn't somebody do that?
Well, they should. They will, and somebody else will steal the credit with zero problems whatsoever.
I'm going to go talk. There's a guy that did the 30 for 30 called I Hate Christian Laettner.
Oh, that was rough.
And he's a big MMA fan, and that's why Ariel Helwani was in the 30 for 30. That's the connection. So the guy, he don't live too far from me either. So I've never met him actually. He just started following me on Twitter, but I got some ideas for him. But 30 for 30, Kimbo versus Sean Gannon, man, I think people would love it.
That would be the best.
I mean,
I want them to put me on it, but I want to look like somebody who's down on their luck, wear a plaid shirt with a broken in dip hat, like a dip advertising hat. And shooting low lights.
What if they got an actor to play you? Who could play you as an actor?
If The Rock's busy, I would say who's the dude from? I love his movies too.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
No,
Rick Moranis.
Yeah,
Jason Statham. The guy from
Fast and Furious. Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel. Yeah,
I'm like a tall Vin Diesel.
You could be Rick Moranis.
No way. He's got a full head of hair. I'm taller than Vin Diesel, I bet. But he could play me. He just have to sit on a phone book. Joe Rogan. I've been getting a lot of Joe Rogan since I shaved my head, Tom. But you haven't seen it. I'll send you a picture later.
Tom, you got to get on Joe's show. I was like, you have Keurig and Chris on there. You don't have Tom.
Whatever.
I guess that's a no comment.
I could see you on that show.
Anyways,
talk about dinosaurs and shit like that. You're a history teacher, dude. He loves history.
Yeah, it would be a perfect match. They probably never even talk about martial arts. They talk about something else.
No, I'm not into it like that. He's on
the martial arts.
Either one. I'm not in martial arts or history at the level he is.
Oh, you should do it and just be real uncomfortable and make eye contact the whole time through it.
3 hours worth. I could pull that off.
Get those fake tears for people who can't blink or don't produce their own tear solution and just stare at them.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to do that.
I would. So what's the name of this podcast, by the way?
What?
The Filthy FRB Show.
And who's Larry Peepee? And how come he hasn't said a word all day?
Oh, he's a journalist, Larry Peppy. He's a bodybuilding and MMA journalist who has a specialty in performance-enhancing drugs. Very nice. Has a very good insight from his years in the bodybuilding industry.
Okay. Has he been on the MMA.TV, whatever it is?
You know, I'm not completely sure. I know he's on Twitter and...
Because that name looks familiar. I've seen it before, but I never heard anybody say his name, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, he's been around the sport for 7, 8, or 9 years, at least that I know of. So usually, you know, if you've been around the sport for a while, you've been around the underground a little bit.
Yeah.
And then if you become a degenerate, you know, you graduate to the OG.
Yeah, I was OG bound by like 2005, I want to say, and I never looked back, and I've always been happier.
So I never understand it. What do you guys do up there? You just like post porn or what do you guys talk about it fighting or?
No, I like listening. I like reading all the people having the exact same fight that they had yesterday, but doing it today. And I'm looking forward to the same arguments tomorrow over and over and over again. It's really like, it's like a male soap opera. It's the dudes who hate cops versus the dudes who love cops. It's also the dudes who hate religion versus the dudes who love religion. It's awesome. It's really a lot of progress gets made reading these things over and over again. Now, I like it for the funny stuff and the interesting stuff.
It's where I get my news from.
Exactly. Exactly. I knew about the alien hybrid guy in California a wicked long time ago, like before I left for Italy. Like,
what?
You ever heard about this guy yet?
No.
Dude, his body was found, I want to say, July 14th, maybe? Okay. And he had 1,200 guns, 13,000 pounds of ammunition, and about a quarter mil in cash in his house. Plus 14 cars stashed all about L.A. And he told his neighbors that he worked for the government. He told his live-in girlfriend of, like, 14 years that he was a CIA alien hybrid person.
Really?
So they go on a trip. He had been sick, and he forbade her from taking him to a hospital. They went on a trip. He dies. She leaves him in the car at an intersection, figuring because he had told her that they're always being monitored, this, that, and the other, by the CIA. So they just leave him and go to Oregon for like a week. And when they come back, his body was still in the same spot. The CIA hadn't been following them or chose not to pick his body up, or none of that was true. One of those three things. So that's when she contacted a lawyer, not like somebody to come get his body. So yeah, that's the short version of that story. I'm sure there's a lot more to it, but yeah, that's why I found out about that. Like probably like a week, a day or two after it happened. Yeah. So I found out about a lot of stuff that nobody cares about except for OGers.
So Matt, what's your best Tim Burrell story? I had the pleasure of meeting him in Chicago a couple weeks ago. What's your best Tim Burrell? Because we're going to have him on the show coming up here soon. I need some ammo to throw.
I've got two.
All right, let's hear it.
All right. So Tim loves obscure diets. Like he's like a housewife. And I say this with all due respect. I love the man. You know, he's my instructor. He's my coach. He's responsible for helping me develop into the martial artist I am. I love the man. But he went on this fad diet. We were going to the Pan Ams in 2004 or 2005. In LA. I was competing. It was my first major gi tournament. I'd only been doing gi for like a year at that time. It's my first major gi tournament, maybe not even a year, like 9 months. So I was a little bit nerved up. It was probably three or four of us going out to compete. And Tim's on this thing called, I believe, the Warrior Diet. And the Warrior Diet was like the paleo diet, except you only snacked on things you could pick up, like nuts and fruits, throughout the day. And at night, you eat, you know, basically a long block of meal, like a 4 or 5 hour meal, you know, like, so you're basically getting the major part of your 2000 plus calories, 2,500 calories a day in like a 4 hour block in the evening. So that's the gist of the diet. Well, the thing about that diet is that fucking sucks when you just choose not to eat all day. And Tim wasn't snacking on nuts or fruit at all. He was whining instead, and that the whining did not make him any fuller.
He was feeding on his tears of sorrow.
Yeah, he was just his tears were funneling into his mouth. And this is Tim before he had the negative influence of being around me. So he was a lot nicer than he is now. So he's basically just sobbing silently. And it's maybe 11:30, maybe even after 12, at the Westin right by LAX. So I don't sleep well when I'm out of town. And like, I just don't sleep much as it is. I'm walking around and I link up with him. I go, "What's up, man?" He's like, "Oh, I'm starving. Let's go eat." I go, "All right, whatever." I was well underweight. I was probably like 15 pounds, 10 to 15 pounds lighter than I needed to be. So I go with Tim up to Denny's and we're just sitting there and we're ready to order. And it's sort of crowded. You know, a bunch of different people. Well, something pops off between two groups of big black dudes, but they were like real well dressed and super duper jacked. So it wasn't like a thuggy crowd, but it was like awkward. So they're all arguing and talking shit and making like gun hands and pointing at each other. And I'm like, "What the fuck did you get me into, Tim?" I'm like, "I got to compete tomorrow in probably like 12 hours. I can't do it with a fucking bullet hole." So like we're slouching in our seats and they're going at it. Finally, it's on. Shirts get ripped off. Both dudes had nipple rings, which I found odd. But like they're like ready to go, shoving starts, and then a slap fight ensues. I didn't get like a confirmation from these fellas. It turns out it was some sort of gay lovers brawl. something to that effect. And that's a decent story. The better story is the time me, him, and Tom went golfing.
Oh, God.
Tom golfs?
No.
Oh, okay.
He came and played golf.
Yeah, a few times. I enjoyed myself very much, actually.
Let me guess, Tom. You're drinking heavily.
Not heavily.
No?
Steadily. Moderately. You know, it was an afternoon after training. You know, it wasn't even like
social.
A Saturday, like, let's booze it up type.
No. I was hurt, actually, Matt, so I wasn't even training, but you guys were.
Yeah, well, I'm always training, even when I'm hurt. You know, setting that example every day. Every day I set the example.
Okay.
Set the example every day.
Just all remember right. That. Continue on with the story, please.
So me and Tom are at my house, and we live near the golf course. Tim's coming down to meet him. So Tom and I are hanging out, talking about politics, social issues, philosophy, stuff like that. And Tim gets there, and Tom goes, "Hey, you know, it's funny. Before Tim gets in here, we should strip down naked and just stand here and just continue talking about philosophy or whatever." I'm like, "I don't know." I'd only known Tom for like a year at that point, so I was still a little uncomfortable around him. You know, like the autobiography thing that he gave me and like his fight gloves and like fight shorts and like collages, stuff like that. It was sort of single white female-y. So I'm like iffy about it. I'm like, "I don't know about stripping down." So he's like, "Come on." He's like, "How about if I give you $100? I go, "All right."
What? That did not get the fuck out of here.
Dude, you gave me.
Just shut up. Shut up and keep going with the real
you
story.
You gave me fucking 420s and 210s.
I didn't give stop you shit.
So I go, "All right, it will sort of be funny." So we stripped down. I'm not going to say Tom stared, but he gasped. Like he was startled. But here's the joke part. Tim cannot move fast if he were on fire. He is like in a NyQuil daze 24 hours a day, except for when he's doing jiu-jitsu. He walks slow. He starts a conversation slow. He even teaches slow with his words. He's iceberg-ish. You know, just his own pace, not nonstop. So from the time he parked his car to the time he came in the house, I don't know. What would you say, Tom? Maybe 7 minutes?
Probably something like that, yeah.
And I don't have an exceedingly long driveway. It was probably 8 steps from the car to my house. So we're standing there naked with Tom staring and drooling. and just standing there. I'm like, I think we finally end up just putting our clothes back on, and Tom ripped his shirt because he's all muscle and stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what happened, right? That's I got the majority of the story correct, right?
Yeah, I think you nailed every single detail.
Yeah, yeah, all the pertinent details. And then we went and played golf, and I may have done better than Tim, but I definitely did better than Tom.
That's undoubtedly true.
And I did better than anybody else who did not play that day. And that's about it, because I'm not good at golf either, but it's fun.
You did better than anybody else that did not play that day.
Actually, that's the exact opposite, because the lower your score, the better you do.
That's true.
Oh, okay.
You know, actually, Brian, Matt also gave me the best, maybe mantra, I think, to live by. One time, we were watching the UFC at Hooters, and it was Anderson Silva versus Stephen Bonner.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember this, Matt?
I think so. Go ahead.
I think this is when that lady collapsed. Do you remember that?
Well, she fell off this bar stool.
Yeah, that's right. She passed out and fell off the bar stool. So we were watching it, and you were like, said something like, oh, yeah, I almost could be the champion. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? He goes, yeah, I trained with Stephen Bonner one time and submitted him, right? And I go, well, yeah, but so what? That's training. He goes, you ever tried to lose in training? And I was like, fuck, actually, no. So I guess he's got a point.
Yeah, set the record straight. Stefan definitely choked me back right afterwards. And I think I spent the rest of the time under him. It wasn't that much fun. But that one time I won was better than all the times I lost put together. that was also the time that you got noticed in the men's room.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
What's that?
That happens all the time. They're like, oh, Rocco, is that you? Oh, no.
No, but a guy actually, I think he tried to shake your hand while you're at the urinal.
Yeah.
Does that happen a lot to you, Tom?
Yeah, no, actually it does. I was kidding. That really does happen kind of often. That's probably, especially at like fights, because you have to stand in that line. There's no way you're getting through that line. There's no way you're cutting it. So, yeah, you got to stand there with the ham and eggers, and sometimes they come up and talk to you.
Yeah. Wow. You just lost at least 4 fans.
That's all we got, man.
Well, I didn't want to fucking out him like that. That's not real cool.
We only have a few diehards, man.
No, Tom's got fans. I'm one. I would love to have a Lawler Mania shirt, but I don't.
I don't have any either.
We got a shirt coming out for the show, actually. So
yeah, and then I did sign a thing with Armbar Apparel, but I don't know what the deal is with the launch of all that or how it works. So.
You're going to have like your Tom Lawler store, right?
Yeah.
So like who's doing the design for you?
I don't know. I haven't
even. Wait, you're going to have a what?
See, like how do I explain? It's a turnkey operation. It's print on demand. So you go on the website. So we're going to have like a filthy FRB store, and then Tom's going to have his store, which is, you know, just him.
Uh-huh.
And whenever if somebody wants to buy a shirt, it's like print on demand. So it takes away all the, you know, all the inherent problems of holding inventory and maybe buying too much inventory. And so it's like a turnkey operation for fighters. And
I got it. That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, you know, the fight kits with Reebok, and you know, I don't expect Tom to comment on this, but the, you know, you, if I bought a $95 Tom Lawler fight kit, I mean, he might be getting a few bucks.
Yeah, I saw it reported as like $3, which to me, if it's $3, that's pretty bad.
Oh, you're definitely going to be rolling the tens of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think this is the better way for the guys to for their fans to wear their stuff is to go direct with this type of model. But hey man, let's wrap this up right here. Appreciate the insight. One of the more legendary fights in MMA history, really. Or if it's not even MMA, it's like unregulated street fights.
Yeah,
fight history.
Yeah, and fight history from 2003, Kimbo versus Sean Gannon. You know, if you're a Ronda Rousey noob or a Conor McGregor noob, go on YouTube, put in Kimbo Slice, Sean Gannon, G A N N O N. And you'll see what we were talking about, a seminal moment in the history of fighting.
Do you guys realize how much that was written about also? Because I remember like killing me to keep the secret. It was in Rolling Stone, like Stars and Stripes, and like USA Today International. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. It really helped. I mean, it was illegal, right? But I think it helped. It helped MMA. You know, Gannon ended up in the UFC, and you know, yeah, he didn't do that well. But he was up against a grizzled vet. You know,
he looked terrible.
Yeah,
they should have put him against like a Paul Buentello.
Yeah, but I think Paul Buentello was good.
He's a banger.
Yeah. He doesn't take anybody down. All right, hey Tom, you have the last word on this one.
Oh shit, man!
You got anything?
No, of course not.
All right, I put you on the spot there.
That's my gimmick.
Yeah. So this drops on Wednesday. If you're listening to it, it's probably Wednesday. Tom's on vacation. I'm going to Vegas, so I'll be doing a little podcast with Chael Sonnen and John P. Marini, who's on the creative team of Global Force Wrestling. And Chael, of course, is the commentator for Global Force Wrestling. So we'll be doing a little on-site podcast, and I have a few bones to pick with this guy, John P. Marini, for giving me shitty seats at fucking WrestleMania and made me fucking pay for them. So I got some issues with this guy.
And Tensai sucks.
Yeah. So I think you guys will enjoy it. I don't get back from Vegas until Sunday night, so I'll probably be up like the Monday after that, and then we'll get back with Tom when he gets back from Alaska. I'm very jealous of his trip to Alaska. It sounds like a cool place. But we'll wrap it there, Tom. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for joining us, man. That's some pretty cool insight to, like I said, a very seminal moment in the history of fighting. And Tom, you know, we'll talk soon, my friend.
Yep.
All right. Take care, fellas. Thanks. All right. Nice talking to you.
Take care, Matt.
Later, Tommy.